The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
And thank you all for showing your faces, even for just a moment. It's just lovely to see who's in the room. It's really sweet for me as a teacher to be interacting with you, even just a little bit. Thank you for that. And today I'm going to offer a short reflection on meeting speculative views with compassion, with kindness. And this may end up being a little bit of a series. I think perhaps I'll continue with it next week. I'm here the next 3 weeks, so, or this week and the next 2 weeks, 3 weeks total. And I'll start with a little bit of a story. So once upon a time, way back in the time of the Buddha was sitting in meditation with a small group of practitioners. I picture him under one of those Bodhi trees, one of those great big Bodhi trees in India. And they are calm there when along comes this young man, very kind of puffed up, pretentious young man with a walking stick in his hand. And he kind of saunters up to the Buddha and leans on his stick and looks at him and says, "Recluse, tell me what views you propose, that you espouse, that you teach." And he's looking for a fight. He's looking for an argument. And the Buddha stays totally cool, totally calm, looks back at him and says, I'll actually quote it here. "Friend, I assert and proclaim my teaching in such a way that one does not quarrel with anyone in the world. That one does not quarrel with anyone in the world." And he goes on to say, "in such a way that perceptions no longer underlie that noble person who abides detached from sensual pleasures, without perplexity, without worry, and free from craving." So that's quite a packed little sentence there, and I will unpack that little sentence next week. But today I'm going to focus more on the interpersonal dimension of this. Because poor Dandapani, his eyebrows shoot up, his forehead wrinkles. They say he wagged his tongue in disbelief and then shook his head and walked away. So it wasn't what he was expecting. He did not get his argument. So this is a little example, and there are many woven throughout the suttas, of the Buddha meeting others, even provocative or hostile others, with absolutely no contention whatsoever. No sense of fighting, but with firmness and with clarity, and often with a teaching that would undercut where they were at. And the broader context of this is that back in the time of the Buddha, kind of the social media of the time were these rich interpersonal debates, or sometimes vociferous and contentious interpersonal debates that would happen between teachers, between groups, between followers of teachers, about philosophy of that day. So there were many, many different religious orders and spiritual orders, and they would debate, argue, sometimes not very nicely. So I've got another quote here. This is from Gil Fronsdal's translation of the Book of Eights, the Atthakavaka. This is considered to be one of the earliest strata of the Buddhist teachings. And a person asked the Buddha, and I'm going to paraphrase here, "Why do people argue who say that they're skilled and then they say that they know everything and speak all these different truths? Are there actually different truths? Or is it speculation they're following?" And the Buddha answers, "Well, except for concepts, there are not many different truths in the world. These people have worked out the logic, the speculation of their views, and they say that there are only two things, true and false. And then based on what they've done and on their religious practices, they show contempt for anyone else's. beliefs. They say my opponent is foolish and unskilled and call themselves right and skilled. They disrespect others who make the same claim. Drunk with conceit, thinking they're complete, they consecrate their minds and their views. They consecrate their minds. So you get the picture, right? There are all kinds of fancy names for the different views that were happening back in that time, but I'm just going to name as a blanket. Most of them involve inferences based on limited information. Some involve deep interpretation of meditative states. Others involve projection into the future. Still others, interpretation of the past. But interpretation through like a limited lens. Right. The Buddha didn't have a very high regard for these kind of speculative views or questions about them, in part because, as what I've read so far kind of illuminates, they tended to promote conflict. So, in another simile, the Buddha talks about this very, very famous simile, the blind men and the elephant. And this was a very not nice trick a king had played on some of his unsighted subjects, where he brought an elephant into an arena, and each non-sighted person was allowed to touch a different part of the elephant. And each one came up with a different theory about what an elephant is: a rope, a wall, a winnowing basket, a pole, a post, a sword, based on the tusk, for example. And as they actually argued so much they came to blows, which was unfortunately the point of this for the king. But the point of the story that the Buddha told is that having a limited sense of the bigger picture is by definition not the full truth. It's not the full truth. In fact, not only did the Buddha point to the fact that people, most of us can't see, most of us don't have the full picture, right? Almost none of us do, very little of the time. So that is a piece for interpersonal conflict. And he also pointed to the way that clinging to a fixed perception or opinion is also an obstacle to awakening. The Buddha likened being distracted by knowing the correct view or learning the correct view instead of practicing with suffering directly as like being hit by a poison arrow and refusing to have the arrow removed, a surgeon remove it and fix the problem, until knowing what kind of person shot the arrow, where they were from, what their name was, what kind of arrow it was, how it was made, what the arrow point was made of, how it was bound together, et cetera, et cetera. By the time all that's learned, the person will be dead, right? So he said, instead, take this practical orientation of wise view, the process of knowing the arising of suffering, knowing that suffering exists, the arising of it, its cessation, and the meditative path to end it. Very practical. And happens to be the formulation of the Four Noble Truths, as most of you know. So that pragmatic orientation to now was the wise view that the Buddha offered, in contrast to all of these different opinions, all of these different speculations. Then, knowing views, there's another sort of level of this, which is knowing that views are conceptual and conditional mental activities. The Buddha encouraged practitioners to know deeper levels of awareness, awakening, and he trusted, sensed into a person's potentiality, for awakening. And this is part, this deep compassion and wisdom was part of what helped the Buddha meet hostility or challenge with evenness, firmness, and this unwavering orientation to pointing people back to their own experience. He pointed to the reality of the human condition in such a way that he actually ended up converting a number of opponents, and who then became his followers or even joined his order. And this meeting the suffering beneath views out of deep compassion animated his teaching life for 45 years. All of that compassion. So I'm going to switch modes a little bit and just say personally, this approach really inspired me in my interfaith hospital chaplaincy. I quickly learned as a new chaplain that stepping over the threshold of each hospital door, I was entering into a completely different world, a new world, every single time. It could be a place of deep peace, sorrow, fear, conflict, or even just idle chit-chat, boredom. It was also increasingly clear that I could meet anyone with an open heart. My role was to provide care for folks. And I would walk in, and there'd be something on the TV that made it very clear they were of a very different worldview, mindset, attitude, life experience than I was. And yet, they were dying, or they were injured, or they were sick. And there was something about the fundamental nature of that, that all of the surface level opinions, conceits, judgments would just drop away. It didn't matter if they had a different attitude, different politics, different religion, culture, or any other kind of difference. There was this open-hearted meeting between us because of the depth of humanity, the common humanity that was there. We all die. We all get sick. We all get injured. And it just cut through all this kind of superfluous stuff. And as I learned to walk into these different strangers' worlds, gradually I also learned to open doorways in the conversations as well. Each one was a chance to extend the practice to include the hearts, the minds, and even the stories of other people. Every encounter was. And it ultimately expanded my respect and my care for other people. Meeting the people this way was a really powerful, natural compassion practice. And emphasized kind of a certain kind of simplicity that would come to the foreground. And I mention all of this because it points to a kind of simplicity with which we can meet ourselves, my opinions. Am I so sure? Or can they be met with compassion, with care? It can be helpful in meeting others. What they say, what they believe may not be nearly as important as their humanity, the way they're meeting the world. And there's something so powerful about touching into that with another person. So internally, this power of not being so sure, not being so entirely certain. And then meeting my own views with a little bit of skepticism, with kindness. It's that underlying kindness. There's an art and a real beauty in seeing the common humanity and the suffering underneath in other people. And then there's the power also of noticing, as I mentioned earlier, the process of views and opinions forming in the mind. as processes of mind. And this goes back to the monks who are sitting with the Buddha after the young man, stick in hand, Dandapani leaves, goes off confused. The monks are also a little bit perplexed by the Buddha's teachings. And they ask him for clarification. And what he says to them basically is, as to the source through which perceptions and notions, that is, views, born of mental proliferation beset a practitioner, if nothing there is found to delight in, welcome, hold on to, this is the end of the underlying tendency to greed, to aversion, to doubt, to conceit, to desire for being, views, ignorance, and it's the end of believing in and resorting to weapons, quarrels, brawls, disputes, malicious words, and false speech. In short, it's the end of suffering. And then he was tired, apparently, and walked off. So, if you're like me, you find that a somewhat enigmatic statement. And that's what I'll pick up on next week, because the monks then go find another senior teacher and have more of a conversation about how these views come to be. So that's my little exploration for today. Thank you for your kind attention. And we have a little bit of time for questions, explorations, comments, anything you want to relate from your own life. I'm going to turn the recording off for now so that we can do this just amongst ourselves. Just want to thank you very much for showing up today, for your practice, for your questions, for your silent holding of space. And offer the sincere wish that each of you feel blessed with mindfulness, awareness, kindness, and compassion, and freedom in your life, in your practice. And may that freedom and kindness ripple outwards and outwards. May all beings be healthy, happy, safe, and free. Thank you very much for your presence and practice today. Be well until we see each other again.
Thank you. See you next week.
Thank you. Take good care, everyone.